wind howls over a post-apocalyptic hellscape inhabited by mutos, dregs, primords. Field Major Steyr of the Sontaran Empire and the bandaged-faced traffic warden from Threads. You shelter below ground, waiting for rad levels to drop to safe levels. Alone, with nothing more than minimal food rations. And somewhat improbably, 5 stories from the Doctor Who universe in any medium. TV, audio, film, novel, comic book. These artifacts, they'll be your only link to the past. Maybe for the rest of your life. Welcome to The Bunker, a Doctor Who podcast from Cutaway Comics. Brought to you by Bamalan Productions. And now, here's your host, Ian Winterton.
In The Bunker today is Steve B. Scott, a comic book artist who's illustrated stories for icons such as Batman, X-Men, Hulk, She-Hulk, Young Indiana Jones, and many more. And we at Cutaway Comics are also lucky enough to have him working for us. Firstly on Eldrad Must Live, written by the late, great Bob Baker himself as a sequel to his Doctor Who story, The Hand of Fear, out now. And on the forthcoming titles, Drax, London Calling, and Drax, LA Woman, written by me. Hello, Scott.
Hey, how are you doing, Ian?
Pretty good, pretty good. So, as with quite a lot of these podcasts, I'm interviewing people I know through Cutaway, and like yourself, I've never met in the real world because we've been, especially with you, because I live in Cheshire in the UK and you live in Belgium at the moment, I believe. And also, there's been a plague. So we've been doing this over, we've been doing nearly everything over the internet. So yeah, so I've never met you before. And also, I don't know you all that well because we've been working professionally together with through Cutaway. And I know bits and bats from having chatted to you on Zoom. But this is going to be fun, finding out this stuff about you.
This is going to be fun. I'm enjoying it already.
Through the prism of Doctor Who. So You've given me your 5 choices that you're going to spend however long you have to be locked in the bunker alone, which when we first came up with this, it was like, oh, that's probably that's a nice, fun sci-fi idea. And now it's like, now it feels like maybe we're going to have to do this.
It feels pretty good when you're locked down in the bunker. Which ones do you want to see over again?
I'm going to take more than 5 if it ever happens for real. But anyway, While it's still fantasy. So your choices quite surprised me, actually, because I know what generation you are. So they're a good mix of classic and new. I was going to start at the beginning with your origin story, as in, who are you? Why are you here? Where did you come from? Because that's not a Belgian accent.
No, but that puts it in a certain light for anybody to know why I'm... why my favorite doctor is Tom Baker, where I'm from, and with my age. First of all, age has to come into it. You know, I'm 54. I'm 54 years old.
Oh, cool.
But here was the thing: in the United States, Doctor Who started really coming to PBS, Public Broadcasting Service, late at night for us, and it was basically, I don't know if it was an answer to, you know, the fact that there was such a popularity from Star Wars, but I didn't get to see my first Doctor Who episode until about 78. And even when I watched them, they were all coming in between 4 to 5 years after airing in the UK. So I got to see the very first Tom Baker episodes, again, 4 to 5 years after they first aired. And that's why, you know, I'm of that generation. I'm a science fiction fan. I love Star Trek, Star Wars, Battlestar Galactica, anything that was, you know, science fiction. And I absolutely fell in love with this late TV show I would watch on a black and white TV now. I mean, there were color episodes, of course, but I was watching them on a TV that I had in my bedroom that was only black and white capacity. And it translates so good to black and white. Oh, it's just amazing how good that show is. So
some of those shows, the smaller and the poorer the quality of the... the quality of the picture, the better.
And there was, it was poor. I know what you mean by this. Exactly.
Somebody described them as Radio Plus. Like like some of the old TV is like, this is almost fine just being audio.
They were on such a budget. Oh my goodness. What they were able to make out of cardboard that still made it look scary was just amazing.
Everyone I've ever met, especially from the old period, I mean, there's a certain time when you went into Doctor Who knowing it wasn't just some sci-fi show. This was going to be huge, and this was going to be your first line of your obituary, as they always say. But before that, it was just another show, and they you can just sort of see, you know, I've spoken to, I mean, he's no longer with us, but Donald Tosh, who has worked in the Hartnell era and is credited with, well, uncredited with writing quite a lot of Terry Nation stuff, and
but maybe
coming up with Regeneration, and then he had a whole life doing other things, and then he's. In his old age, he comes back and he's doing Doctor Who conventions, just going, I had no idea when we were doing a little bit of that and a little bit of Coronation Street that I was going to end up talking about black and white TV.
But the old ones, if I'm not mistaken, was, and you can correct me on this again, you would have also had to dig them up and rerun somehow because they're way before our time. But it was just supposed to be a kid's show, kind of educating kids about history, correct?
Well, a little bit. They've always been in the family slot.
Mm-hmm.
And the second ever adventure was the Daleks. So they went off remit almost straight away. And it was the Daleks. Right. And it was the Daleks in 63 and 64. They were there at the same time as the Beatles. So they called it Dalek Mania. So, and they have never left British culture ever since. Like,
of course.
I grew up.
That's amazing.
There have been kids in playgrounds shouting exterminate since before I was born. And now all three of my kids have gone through the phase of shouting exterminate.
Isn't that the beautiful, wonderful thing about Doctor Who is that it is generational. In other words, you know, you can't be just like this old folks, you know, to say, oh, yeah, well, I watched Doctor Who. I watched him in black and white. And it was Hartnell or it was Troughton. Mm-hmm. Sure, but you could be somebody that's much younger and say that it was Matt Smith, you know, and say, yeah, he's my favorite doctor. Well, generationally, he's a perfect fit for that generation to be your favorite doctor. And most of us, our favorite one is the first one we ever saw, because that is the one that locked us into the game.
Yes, that's human nature.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, there's probably many, many other different things people are into. I'm sure there's parallels with people who are really into football. Like the team, when they first started watching matches, it's probably much the same as Tom Baker is for us. To who is sport for people? It's for the nerds that generally...
I guess so, but
I understand it better. Obviously, there's no generalizations, but a lot of Doctor Who fans are the nerds. And there's a lot of refuge in fandom. There's a lot of, I'm the weird kid. I know I certainly was the weird kid. I like comics and I like sci-fi and I like Doctor Who and I don't have that many friends at school. And then I meet Doctor Who fans and go, oh, you're like me. And there's this whole community. And then in later life, you realize anyone who works in anything creative seems to have played Dungeons and Dragons and being into comics and Doctor Who.
You're completely right. Everybody, you're right. I was on the coast. I was living in Biloxi, Mississippi, is where I was from. And I discovered eventually from a local convention that there was a fan club called the Companions of Doctor Who. And they had a fanzine and they would write fan fiction of Doctor Who. Mm-hmm. And I contributed at like the age of 12 drawings to this fanzine, you know, because I was just such a big fan. But and this is in a little place like Biloxi, Mississippi, that they had that, you know, fan club. It's such a niche thing. You are really there's the cool nerds that are into the Avengers. And then you're a real nerdy nerd if you're into Doctor Who. And I'll say that I am a nerdy nerd.
You're in good company.
Understand, I'm from a little city, Biloxi, Mississippi, near New Orleans, down on the coast in the U.S., and I am just enthralled and just love this show from the U.K. called Doctor Who and Tom Baker. There was a time in my childhood I remember being able to recite in order all of his episodes, titles. I remember this and testing myself on it, going like, oh my God, I remember them all. I would, and this was pre-VHS now, I would take an audio cassette recorder, put it up to my television, and so I would record the audio of the episode so that I could play the audio back. And that's why I even say that they were really great audios. You know,
these are almost like medical markers. because that's what we all did. The syndrome of being a Doctor Who fan is like, we've all got audio tapes and
We didn't know when we'd see it that episode again. I mean, at the time, you know, now everybody has this. I mean, you can binge an entire. Two months ago, I binged Star Trek, the original Star Trek from 1960s, from start to finish. And let me tell you, some of them do not live up, if you know what I mean. There's an episode where, you know, I think Kirk was pretty much flirting with a 14-year-old girl, and I'm like, no, that's not good. I remember I had Hulu as my, provider. Like, you know, people have Netflix and all. In the States, you can have Hulu. Here, you can't have Hulu, so I don't have Hulu anymore. Mm-hmm. But there was a time that they had all the Doctor Who episodes, all of them, that were found and remastered to be available at the time. So I got to watch Patrick Troughton episodes and John Pertwee episodes I had never seen before. And I didn't binge them because I thought, well, it's on Hulu. It'll be here forever. Next thing you know, they were taken off of there. But still, you know, we take for granted that it's always out there. It's not.
Is BritBox available in Belgium? So I think
I don't know. And
now, without even thinking about it, I obviously pay for BritBox, but then I pay my license fee, so I have access to BBC iPlayer. BBC iPlayer has every single New Who on it, and BritBox has every single Classic Who on it, including the animations.
Isn't that funny to be able to say the New? Like, but you know, we can say and separate the New Who from the old. The classic, there is a separation. And it's also why one of my very favorite episodes, or you know, was in that list of my favorites, is because it surprised me.
Three out of your five are New Who.
Yeah,
which is you know, it's pretty cool. But so I guess you watched a lot of Tom Baker on PBS. PBS.
Yes.
According to the internet, it was from the late 70s, so maybe Star Wars had something to do with it.
I think it did. That's what I'm saying.
There was a thirst for sci-fi of any...
Well, they also got a great deal, because here's the thing. I got to watch Benny Hill, I got to watch Monty Python, and I got to watch Fawlty Towers on PBS.
Oh,
I had the motherlode of everything wonderful from the UK, and I'm like, man, I want to go to England one day. I said, this is amazing. I saw the Doctor episodes of Tom Baker 4 to 5 years after they had ever aired already. He was already an institution... Tom Baker was as the Doctor, and then I'm discovering him for the first time in the U.S. And then you get comic books in the U.S. reprinting some of the stuff that Dave Gibbons did, you know, of Tom Baker and all that was
amazing. And Mike McMahon's as well. Do you ever see any Mike? Is it Michael? Is Michael Mick McMahon?
But we But I didn't see his Tom Baker though. I thought he did the Peter Davison ones, didn't he?
But he also famously did one with a Cyberman called Flotsam and Jetsam with Tom Baker. And that's very much what Neil Gaiman based that, his first Matt Smith episode, that sort of Flotsam and Jetsam and people made different parts, which is very much Neil Gaiman comic book.
Of course.
Very aware of Doctor Who Weekly. Which is obviously why, you know, the thing that's brought us together, the comics and the Doctor Who combined.
Yeah, and I was very lucky that Gareth ever got in touch with me.
What was it about Genesis of the Daleks? Is first of the list. What is it about Genesis of the Daleks?
Well, here's the thing. I mean, Doctor Who, you know, I got to see the first, I mean, I literally got to see Tom Baker's first, where he was like going in and out of the TARDIS, trying on different costumes. So I got to be, you know, it gives you that starting point. And I was like, man, who is this? Goofy guy. This is great.
So you watched the whole of that season?
Oh, I watched it. Yeah. And then the Genesis of the Daleks that got me, it was really kind of like, I guess it was closer to the Star. It was dark. Closer to the Star Wars thing. I mean, it looked like Nazi Germany during World War II. It was tough. But that one scene, I think, that was so critical, where Tom Baker, the Doctor, is saying, you know, if I put these two wires together, I can eliminate the Daleks from ever existing. But what gives somebody the right to do that, whether they're evil or not, gives me the right to be like the, you know, judge and executioner of this whole, that was amazing to me, just for him. That was just amazingly written scene, and it was played out really well to me, you know?
Yeah. Oh,
but what a dark episode, though. So many of them were much lighter and more whatever. That one all of a sudden took to the dark side. The whole episode did. Episodes, the whole storyline, you know?
Yeah, I think that's always been one of the strengths of Doctor Who is, we'll probably talk about this when we come on to New Who, because I mean, Russell T. Davis understands Who possibly better than any human on the planet. Hence, it was him that got to bring it back. Thank God it was him and not whoever was kind of half doing it in Canada and Hollywood in the 90s.
I don't quite understand
Doctor Who, but let's do it anyway.
That was such a shame because they picked a really good actor to play.
He's amazing.
The Doctor. And I was even so excited. And then when I watched it, I was very young whenever that came out, and I was excited.
96.
But it was...
So you weren't...
okay. You know, I was in my 20s or something, so I was very young still. But point is, though, but I was so also disappointed at the same time because it needed somebody from London. It needed that feel of somebody there making it, that it was too Americanized.
Yeah.
And there are things where that's fitting, but not to take Doctor Who and make it Americanized. Oh, hell no. So anyway, yeah, but my first on the list, though, was the Genesis of the Daleks, as far as, like, if I went in order of when they all came out, what is my top one? And if I recall correctly, yeah, one of my very favorites of all time is the fifth one I'm giving you, but I'm going in the direction of everything. Mm-hmm. But we'll get to that. We'll work our way up to that.
There's so much to say about Genesis, but it is, I mean, it's got Davros, for God's sake.
Yeah, I know. Like, oh,
one of
God.
One of the best creations ever, because you just can't imagine Doctor Who without him. Although I sometimes wish they hadn't brought him back. Like, I can see why they did, because he's such an amazing creation, but there's a sort of law of diminishing returns.
Well, okay, the character that they brought back sometimes when they shouldn't have was the Master. Like, there was an episode in the
Even as a kid, I'm like, oh, it's going to be the Master, isn't it?
Exactly.
It's always the Master. But with Davros, it basically was whenever there's Daleks, there's going to be Davros. That became the every single story till it got cancelled was...
Yeah.
Daleks meant Davros was going to be hidden somewhere. But he is a really good good invention. But
he's a beautiful design as far as like a horrific horror creature. His design with their budget was well done, in my opinion.
Yeah. He's absolutely brilliant. He has a genius design.
Well, in that Genesis of the Daleks,
I still don't think they've quite used him again. He's just sort of always been there as a sort of side thought.
In the Genesis of the Daleks, I remember the prosthetics were such that he wasn't able to have any movement really of the face. In other words, they perfected it later on in the new Who, which I haven't heard the term New Who until I'm talking to you, which I love it because it makes me
think. Oh, God. I'll probably get cancelled for saying that.
The New Who.
That's what we used to call it, and now we kind of use it ironically, and now we just use it all the time.
Well, there is a definite break between the old and the new, you know, the classic and the new. But somehow, somewhere...
We'll talk about that
new...
when we get onto your third...
Yeah, trip. But... somewhere in the new Doctor Who, there was a an episode I remember where they, you know, had Davros back, and man, the prosthetic, they had him moving his mouth so well, he looked real. Mm-hmm. You know, again, not only budgetary, but also, you know, just the ability to do prosthetic makeup for movies or TV has improved so well.
Yeah,
so it's beyond just budget. But back then, in the 1970s of that, it was probably like a 73, 74 episode that I'm talking about, Genesis of the Daleks. It's
75, actually.
75? Okay.
Yeah.
You know, it scared the young me watching it on a black and white TV. I can tell you that. It was scary in a great kind of way. I like being scared. I love horror. So it was a great kind of scare.
The next one you've picked is actually my first Doctor Who memory. So it's always on my list.
Oh, but, wow.
But like horror of Fang Rock.
Yes.
Just from the next season. And I say that, but also Terror of the Zygons, which was supposed to be the end of season 12.
Mm-hmm.
But they then pushed it to the beginning of season 13 because Space 99 was 1999 was coming out. So because that was coming out on the other channel, they went, can we have Doctor Who in September as well? So you look at it now and you go, oh my God, it feels like years between these, but because you're so young. But actually, there was 4 months between seasons.
Oh, wow. That is.
Imagine that. Now we wait nearly 2 years, but it's like 4 months between seasons. And when
we wait a long time.
I was.
Yes.
I remember Horror of Frank Rock, and I must have been like four, but I also remember Terror of the Zygons, which was September 75, because I wouldn't go in our downstairs toilet because it had orange and the orange was just by the interior right. of the Zygon spaceship.
Oh, wow.
I really remember Horror of Frank Rock really well, but actually thinking about it, Zygons was on before.
But this being said, you've still been watching Doctor Who since way before me, because at the time, in other words, you were watching it a couple of years before I was, at least, even with that. So you were a kid, and it was successfully scary.
But also, the swings and roundabouts of it is, when I speak to people from the States or Australia, the way your TV system works is you guys like repeating. So they were like, Australians are like, oh yeah, I watched John Pertwee about 10 times every episode because they're on loop. PBS showed a lot more Doctor Who than we, and we got nothing. We literally got Doctor Who.
Oh, and repeat. You hardly got any repeat.
And we never got repeats.
That's
why there's so much. That's why if you had to go to your fucking grands or something, like I often did on a Saturday, the worst thing that could happen is I'd be like, oh, it's Saturday, Doctor Who tonight at 5:15. Going to grandma's today. Fuck.
Yeah.
Means I'm going to miss Doctor Who.
Yeah, because they never watched the news.
My mum used to say, it'll be on again. And she was lying. But now if I say that, I'll be like, you can watch it anytime. Watch it or catch it.
Yeah, I know. Now you can. I that's the reason. Again, I used to have a little black. I mean, look, there was color TV when I was watching Doctor Who. The color TV was in the living room where that my grandmother. I was raised by my mother and my grandmother. She watched that. Mm. But now the little black and white that I was able to watch anything I wanted on had rabbit ears. It doesn't matter to me. It was about the size of a computer, but a laptop monitor. But I would stay up late at night and enjoy this black and white.
I was telling my friend the other night, I had, she's a bit younger than me, so the fact I had a black and white TV, it was like, I might as well said, I've got a mangle. We had a mangle instead of a washing machine.
My girlfriend's exactly half my age. Whenever I tell her about the things, I stop myself and say, I don't need to tell her anymore.
She'll think you're a time traveler. But the black and white TV, I used to just watch anything in my room. But the one thing that really sticks in my head, which is not Doctor Who, but it's sci-fi, is I just happened to turn on the TV. I had no idea what I was about to watch. And it was quite late. And there's a spaceship going through space. And I was like, I like spaceships. I like space. And little did I know, it was literally the opening of Alien.
What?
On a black and white TV. And it changed my life.
What did it air on when you were a kid? Because you had to have HBO or something for Alien.
I think it was just on like BBC Two or something.
What? They didn't do that in the States. Oh.
No, it's like 11. I mean, this was the 80s. So I was sort of...
HBO was the time when I first. I didn't see Alien in the theaters. I remember watching it first.
No, I've still never seen it. I've still never seen it in the theaters.
I haven't either. And it was just blew my. It, like you said, mind blowing. It was so well done. Oh. It was just so well done.
But there was something about discovering it, not even knowing what it was, and like you say, the rabbit ears. I had the wobbly antennae on the back,
right?
And so every so often there'd be some snow. And then I'd have to make the picture clear again, and I was terrified. And it was
that was
a formative experience. That was.
I've had to do that too, but man, that never aired in the States on something like that. It would have been purely on an HBO. And whatever I could watch in my bedroom was just gold, because I could just be playing with Star Wars toys and watching Doctor Who with my tape recorder recording it. Oh, anyway, man.
The parallels between Alien and Fang Rock, even though Fang Rock came first, weird blobby monster in an enclosed space. Fang Rock is, I think, of all my favorite Doctor Who's, so many of them are based under siege.
Yes.
There's just something about Monster in the House, something about people.
And they can't get out.
People getting picked off one by one.
Yeah, they're getting picked off.
Feels to my space brain, doesn't it?
Well, hold on. I know this is audio only, but you could probably see behind me a thing.
Oh, the thing. Yeah, there's another one. Yeah.
Thing was another one. And that one actually topped it one bit, because No one knew who was already the Thing. Brilliant. And
again, Framework prefigures that because it's a shape changer.
Yeah.
So you can't even trust the people in it.
Framework
is the Thing meets the Alien.
I know.
Inspired by an old poem.
Any time that one came on, I was just glued because, like I said, the first time I watched it, and it was a mystery about it. It was a mystery to it. I just loved it. Oh, that was just great.
How much did the Target novels... You lucky Americans, you got to watch the episodes a lot. But for us, that's why the Target novels you'll hear us talk about. The comic took off because we were starved of the TV version.
Yeah, you wanted extra.
That's why Doctor Who. That's why Doctor Who. You know, our friend Des Skin, who's Cutaway, exists because inspired by his amazing work and his support. But that's why his genius was going. Kids love spin-off material because they don't get to watch it. We literally get to watch it on TV for 25 minutes a week, a few weeks a year, and then we starve. You know,
I became a comic book fan because of Star Wars and looking for more material of Star Wars. Did the same with Doctor Who. I was looking for more. Found Doctor Who magazine. In the States, it was hard to get any issues of Doctor Who magazine. You could get some.
Yeah.
But when Marvel started reprinting for only a brief amount of time, some of the Tom Baker ones, it was glorious because it was extra stories.
Yeah, yeah. Well, it was Marvel UK that that Des worked for, and he went to them with the idea for Doctor Who.
I'm a big fan of him from his Warrior magazine.
Yeah,
I mean, oh.
But yeah, Frank Rock. Anyway, so that's.
I'm interesting to hear that's one of your favorites and the first one you ever saw.
Yeah, well, it might be the beginning of the season, which is Terror of the Zygons, but I have a definite memory of we're sitting down. And my parents, that's the thing about Doctor Who in the UK is it's passed from generation to generation. My dad made Patrick Troughton's TARDIS disappear when he was an assistant film editor, when he was training.
Oh, wow.
Everyone got to go and do a bit of Doctor Who, even if they never worked on it. So Doctor Who was just sort of passed down as, let's go and see how the kid reacts to, you know, hiding behind the sofa, watching this scary thing at tea time. And so I remember it's this classic thing of, your dad encouraging you to watch a scary thing and your mum wanting the scary thing to stop. And I just remember being stuck between them. And I remember the lighthouse and I remember something green going at the side of the lighthouse.
Oh,
and
yes.
I screamed and threw a cushion at the TV. And then my mum went, right. And she went to the TV and turned it off. And I screamed even louder till my mum turned it back on. And it was like, you know, but that's the first episode I definitely know that was Horror Frank Rock.
Yeah, and see, for me, I've never seen it in color because I always only saw it. Like I said, a lot of my memories of Tom Baker episodes I saw over and over and over again in black and white, even though I knew they were in color. Genesis of the Daleks I had on a DVD set once, but I only saw it in black and white. It had a feeling of the old classic film monsters type, you know, like the Boris Karloff type feel to me. Seeing it.
I bet it would really suit being in black and white, actually.
Really was so good in black and white. Oh, my God. So, yeah, but those are my two of what you would call old classic Who.
Yeah, so Tom Baker is your guy. Nearly everybody I know has met Tom Baker at least once, but I never have.
I never have either.
I have worked with Louise Jameson, who is like the best.
Ah, yes.
But yeah, I just think Leela is the perfect, getting away from the fact that she looks amazing, but she is just a perfectly designed companion.
And I will say, to this day, she still looks amazing.
Oh my God. Yeah. Well, I think she's vegan and she's into yoga and Pilates. She's absolutely lovely.
She was an amazing companion because she also saw it, even though her character was written for her to ask those questions. I mean, a companion was set there to ask the doctor, what is this? And, you know, it's where he would explain it to the audience. Oh, well these people have been blah, blah, blah.
Yeah,
she was also not of Earth. So that also made it very interesting as well for us because we're learning about her.
That's why she's so well designed, because she's got this sort of ignorance, but she's also got the spirit. So she's always cutting him down to size, as she did in real life. Like, she was the one person, Tom Baker. Yeah, they're friends now, but they didn't get on. Like, she talks openly about how they get on now.
Oh, that's great.
But he had an ego on him.
Yeah.
And she had no time for it. But that, for a reason, is that the fact that he didn't dominate her shows in the show as well. He's actually at his best acting with her, I think, because he's not phoning it in. She's just going, come on. And then she sort of famously says to him, why are you staying in Doctor Who? He's like, where are you going? He's like, well, I'm going to do some proper acting in some Shakespeare. Why, you know, you need to get out of the show before you become, you know, that was her. But I think she also now says maybe she wishes she'd done another couple of seasons because she does a lot of Doctor Who still, you know, so it swings and roundabouts.
Yeah, but she did enough to be, you know, a staple. Everybody remembers her character and everything else. She did a great job. And yes, she was very beautiful to look at. Mm-hmm. You know, I'll just say that. You know,
yeah, there's no denying that. But also, yeah, so she asks the Doctor questions. She also takes the Doctor down a peg or two, which not a lot of the companions do. Like the best ones do, I think. Like Joe Grant takes Pertwee down a peg or two.
Yeah,
mixed their pomposity and Sarah Jane as well.
I agree with you on that. That's good.
And then what's
Sarah Jane as well. She was one of my She was my first to be the companion with the Doctor, and also what was his name?
Harry Sullivan.
Those two. Which he was only there because they thought they'd have an old Doctor. They weren't sure, and they wanted somebody very agile, male,
to do the punching.
Yeah, but they realized Tom could do it, so they didn't need him anymore.
You're listening to The Bunker from Cutaway Comics, publisher of creator-owned comics based on characters and stories set in the Doctor Who universe. For more on Cutaway, visit cutawaycomics.co.uk or follow us on Twitter at cutawayuniverse.
How I first met you is you doing the art for Bob Baker's sequel to Hand of Fear, which is obviously a Tom Baker episode. And the fact that we're there publishing the sequel written by Bob himself. I mean, what's it been like?
I know.
What was it like getting a script from Bob Baker? God rest his soul.
It was amazing to get a chance to work with him because, again, he's a legend to me. The first pitch that I got of what I was going to do, I did the cover based on. And then I will say that he changed the pitch. Like what I got turned out to be a bit different. Mm-hmm. And then it was taken from screen to somebody else converted it into comics. Mm-hmm. And I had to work with it a little bit here and there to convert it. Like, in other words, mm-hmm. it was still not in form yet, but it was just magical to get a chance to know that. I mean, I enjoyed so many of his stories over mm-hmm. my years in my childhood and getting a chance to work on a continuation out of Hand of Fear. And mm-hmm. the story was really fun. And I was like, man, I like Eldred Must Live.
I mean, you know, he's not been that long since he died. And he's still not really sunk in. I didn't know him all that well, but I've met him a lot of times and he's just, it was absolutely gutting.
And it was out of the blue. I think I was talking to Gareth or someone and they told me that he had taken a fall.
Could have happened to any of us at any time. Just terrible.
But it was a joy. Just,
you know, Oscar nominated writer with Wallace and Gromit and all that stuff.
Yeah.
And then K-9 and Doctor Who and what we're working on together is, you know, we're working on storylines that he blessed with Drax, which is his character for the Armageddon Factor, which and we can talk about here because we can talk about what we want. It's our podcast and Cutaway have sponsored it. Without going into storylines, giving Drax new life, when Bob has written some prose with Drax in it, which is where the taxi cab with TARDIS cunningly done in words and with letters and numbers on the license plate.
My gosh, I love that. Yes.
Yeah. So that all comes from him. And it's just been great sort of going, oh my God, he's signed off on both the stories that we're working on. And he's happy with the further adventures after the two I'm doing with you.
My friend, the stuff I've gotten from you on this, and again, the character and the nature of his origin of who developed him was, you know, Bob Baker. And this is a dream project for me. This is one that I've done a lot of stuff. I've done a lot of
you've done some icons in your time.
I've done some icons.
You haven't even mentioned your comic book career.
It's not important. This is a dream come true. I'm enjoying and I'm not laughing. I mean it. This is really a dream come true. I absolutely love this character. I love what the story that you've written is just wonderful. It's right up. I don't have to tell you that, and I wouldn't tell you that if it wasn't true. It's just wonderful.
I'm looking forward to doing part two, which is set in LA, as you know. Yeah, when me and Gareth were in LA, we were like, oh, I'm glad I haven't written it yet, because we're now in LA and I get to run around.
Awesome.
that's why it's going to be set in Santa Monica and Muscle Beach and all that stuff. Yeah. Suddenly makes sense.
I hope you got me some good reference shots when you were there.
We did. We took some photos, but some of the sections of that are going to be set. We're going to have a sort of little cameo from someone who might look a bit like Arnold Schwarzenegger.
Oh, that would be wonderful. Because okay,
that's
yes,
when, because when Drax is running around, it's that part of the '70s when Arnold wasn't famous, but he was on Muscle Beach making a name for himself. So,
all fantastic.
So there's all.
I know we have cyborgs
meeting Arnie. Is kind of is the little bit we're gonna have.
And I know we've got the colorist on board that I worked with on Eldred Must Live.
Andrew Orton, he's
Andrew.
He
did some work. Like I tried to keep a 70s looking theme to the way I drew it, to the way I paced it. I mean, it feels like a 70s comic. Without telling him a beat about it, he went ahead and colored even like the gut, the margins, like a tan, like a newsprint. And it was so glorious, and to me that storytelling. To try to immerse, because I'll say it like this, and you and I've talked about this. I think there's going to be an older audience that wants these comics. You told me, and it made me feel so good too, that there's a younger audience that also wants anything dealing with Doctor Who, no matter what it comes from.
Doctor Who, it wasn't just British people, but a lot of them were the British people who are Uber fans. But when we were in LA, we had our little panel, and there are people there, and there were kids and they're in their early 20s and they're like, yeah, there's one woman and she's an absolute Colin Baker nut. Someone else who just loves anything to do with Susan. You know, these kids literally have all of time and space.
Right.
Any media they can watch, binge, and they latch on to their own thing.
That made me feel so good when you told me that.
Yeah, it's like the opposite of we have our doctor because that's what was on TV. Now they can choose so much.
But I can also see...
The first doctor is the thing they like the look of on the books or whatever.
But I can also see going backwards and enjoying some of the other previous incarnations of the doctor or regenerations. Like Patrick Troughton episodes, I loved the Patrick Troughtons that I've seen.
Yeah, so your comic book career, Marvel, DC... I'm sure many other people
Dark Horse, I got to Indiana Jones.
I've seen some of your Indiana Jones on your page. Yeah. Did you get much into? I mean, you say you love Warrior and all that side of stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
So did you get into 2000 AD and Judge Dredd and all that stuff?
I did. I was able to get some Judge Dredd 2000 ADs rather back in the day, you know, when it was a newspaper, like even the cover, the front cover was like very, I love it. See, I love science fiction, those anthology stories, those quick 6-page stories.
Yeah,
and sometimes if it's a run, like every week, another 6-page increment comes out. I personally think that's the way comics should be. The manga, the Japanese, that is how they do their comics, and it is extremely successful for them. I like the format of that. You know, in the U.S., it doesn't. You know, it's once a month. In Europe, it's whenever the hardcover volume comes out. You know, it's done in volumes, and they're painted, and take your time.
Yeah, well, the monthly issue. Is what Cutaway's gone with because making them American size, that's kind of in the UK what's become, other than 2000 AD, which comes out once a week, comics of American style comics.
Which I just got a 2000 AD from a good friend of mine was in the UK and I said, please pick me up the whatever latest issue there is. The magazine now is exactly the same cut and dimensions as the American style magazines were. Like I've got my Warren magazines and I've got this latest 2000 AD. They're exactly the same cut, dimensions, and everything. Anyway,
so they've still gone for an American format. So
they've gone to an American magazine format. Yeah.
So they've not gone for American comic like our cutaways are.
Right. No, they haven't gone that way.
That was another thing actually that Des Skin did in his varied career. Was repackage Dredd as American.
Oh, for the Eagle comics. For the Eagle comics.
Quality comics. That was Dez who...
Oh, of course.
And,
I mean, okay.
Dredd colored was amazing. And how amazing were the Brian Bolland covers for that?
Oh, yeah.
They're
brilliant.
Some of the best comic art I've ever
seen. And for me too, brilliance of them deciding to let's hire him to do brand new covers for it. They could have gone cheap. They could have said, hey, there's images we can pluck from this and we'll just blow it up. Brian Bolland art clip from the comic book blown up still looks amazing. They could have done it, but instead they hired him to do something new. And that, in my opinion, was the most beautiful work he had ever done. Those new covers.
Oh, there's some of the few comics I've still got from my childhood of those Dredds. Des knows how to make something collectible. back to Doctor Who. This is why the format does not need more than five choices, because we've now got to the end of choice two.
Oh, yeah, yeah. There you
and,
go.
And your other three choices are all new Who, which is testament to how much of a fan you are, because you could either be the sort of fan that goes, oh, I used to like Doctor Who, and when it came back, it's come back. Oh, well. But you tuned in for Rose, I take it.
I had to buy it. It was one of those things where I was into buying DVD sets. And so I said, oh, my God, I got to pick this up. This is Doctor Who. I heard it been out, and I now got to see it. Eccleston, I was blown away by his portrayal. He was a modern, sleek, vibrant version of Tom Baker to me. Mm-hmm. I mean, I say modern and sleek. His look with the leather coat and all that, he just fit. But his goofy, quirky smile, with his ears and his nose and all that. And that was physically, that was the Doctor to me again. And I said, how did they do this? They nailed it. And that first episode, they nailed it. And Rose, Billy Piper is so gorgeous in a weird way, too. She's not the standard, beautiful woman. No, she's got a quirkiness to her face and everything, too. I was like, they nailed this. This is a modern-day version of what Doctor Who should be.
Yeah, I just remember Eccleston was really well-known to UK audiences because he'd been, he was a famous Shakespearean actor. He'd been in big shows. He played the Second Coming of Jesus Christ, if you've ever seen the Second Coming. It was written by Russell T. Davis.
Ah, okay.
So that's where they knew each other from. So he got him to play Christ as a sort of audition for Doctor. Doctor.
Okay, I love it.
Oh, you should watch the Second Coming if you get a chance. It's like early 2000s, brilliant, brilliant Russell T. Davis. It's basically, if you like Doctor Who, written by Russell T. Davis, you're going to love. He basically said, if Jesus came back now, what would actually happen? So he comes back.
Oh, there's
and
so much fun to play with there.
Yeah, and he's Christopher. And so it's social realism, but with Jesus Christ coming back in Manchester, and he looks like Christopher Eccleston.
Okay, I've got to mark this on the list.
Oh, it's brilliant.
I didn't hear about it.
It's sort of essential of the history of Doctor Who, because you see him being the Doctor.
So what did you think of him? I mean, myself personally, I thought he just nailed it.
I remember being very excited it was coming back, because I'd love Russell T. Davis for A Second Coming and Queer as Folk and so many other amazing shows. He was already a name. So the idea that somebody who was really good, and we'd known he was a Doctor Who fan because he wrote Virgin New Adventures when he was younger. He'd already done loads of cool stuff on children's television. But I actually remember watching it going and being okay with it, to be honest. I was there going, don't be like 96, where I had that feeling. And I remember going, some of this writing's really good. Oh, that made me cringe a bit. Oh, some of this writing's really good. Oh, that made me cringe a bit. And then it was like, fuck me, it's over in 45 minutes. There's a bit too much story there. That was my genuine opinion of it. And
we were used to short episodes.
Yeah, but I didn't go, oh, that was so disappointing. I really, really wish they hadn't bothered. I thought that was pretty good. And it's what we were touching on before when we were talking about how that, from him Tom Baker trying on silly costumes to Genesis of the Daleks, that's kind of what the first season of the new Doctor Who is. It has the brilliant idea of, you've just basically had an adventure in your modern day life, then you go traveling with the Doctor. That is never going to get old. That's why this thing's been going on for 60 years.
That's why it's so exciting, because anybody can be a companion to the Doctor by happenstance. Isn't that exciting? Can you imagine? Can you imagine being the person that says, no, I don't think I will for that? No, you wouldn't be. You'd say, yes, take me.
But they had Rose, and then we didn't know. He'd basically carefully done this. He basically was going, let's get the kids in. So the next episode, I remember watching it. I remember watching it clearly in a hotel room on holiday with my friend. I remember because the Pope had died. So before Doctor Who, they kept going, has there been white smoke from the Vatican? No, there hasn't yet. Anyway, now Doctor Who.
Oh, that's so funny to remember by that.
So that's all tied up in my head. But I remember watching the one where they go into the year 5 billion, and it's got the box of Malhoun and the face of Bo and the trees. And I remember thinking, maybe kids will like this, but I'm still I'm still wondering. And then they had the Stavine, and it was still carrying me along because I was going, I'm liking it for what it is. It's still not quite for me. And the Stavine and the farting, didn't like it, but it was still good.
I do remember about the farting. I forgot about that too. They were disgusting, but fun disgusting.
But then they got to the episode of Dalek, and that was fuck me. He's basically perfectly done this. Now he's got everyone hooked. Here's a Dalek, and it's quite adult, and it's a suicidal Dalek, and it's scary. And then he didn't let up till the end of the season because we had we had the empty child. We had oh my God,
was some great stuff.
The whole first season is just absolutely perfect.
But here's the two things you got to remember for me that was so amazing in a sense. Again, like I said, I picked it up and discovered it on a DVD, longing for it to be on DVD so I could see it because I didn't have access to see it another way. So I got to binge it, and that helped, I think. I got to binge it. Also, again, my last expectation was unfortunately shattered because of that 96 whatever. Yeah. Again, I was as disappointed with everybody. I thought the actor was brilliant. He looked like a great, I want to follow this guy as the doctor. This is great, but it was done wrong.
So after Rose, your next two choices are Matt Smith. So what is it? Distinct lack of David Tennant compared to other people.
Well, this was a weird thing. Okay, first of all, I did not have the access to brand new episodes of the Doctor Who. I did it through my DVD set. Loved Eccleston. And when they got rid of him so quickly, I was a bit dismayed. Like, why? This guy is great. He's only going to be there one season. I didn't have access to the Tennants. So it was already, everybody was raving about, put it this way, it was that nerd being late to the party when all the other nerds are raving about, and mainly girls. Oh, the doctor is so cute. Oh, he's such a good looking guy. And I'm like, that's not the doctor. Doctors should be. Yeah. So it was my old person kicking in saying, no, the doctor should have that quirky looking face with a quirky smile. You know, it doesn't need to be that all the women are raving over the doctor as being so cute. Finally, on some network, I was able to start getting some Tennants and I got to watch some. And yeah, he was brilliant as the doctor. But at that time, I was there for at the end of his, and I started the first Matt Smith episode I ever saw. I was like, oh my gosh, this guy is a young Tom Baker. He is, and he is also just brilliant for the young audience. Bring in the girls, bring in the guys. You know, it's nice that it's a mix of male and female and gay and straight and transgender. I love that about Doctor Who. It brings in everyone. But so it was a good thing for me that it was a cute young guy. But Matt Smith nailed it for me even better than Tennant did. And again, I know I'm in a very small club by saying that, but everybody's got their favorite doctor.
No, I agree. Matt Smith is absolutely brilliant as the doctor. So Time of the Doctor.
Yes.
Trenzalore. It was the one of these that I had to rewatch because it was the only one. All the others I've watched lots and lots of times, but this was the one I'd only watched on transmission, so I'd never rewatched it because I didn't. After Day of the Doctor, which is your next, which you say is your number one, I've watched Day of the Doctor endlessly over and over and over again and love it. And we'll talk about that in a minute. But Time of the Doctor came next. And I just remember going, he nailed the 50th anniversary episode. And then something went a bit wrong with Time of the Doctor. So what is it? So defend it.
Well, Time of the Doctor, of course, dealing with his, that's his last one. And again, I'm a big Matt Smith fan. One of the things I really loved about that episode, I guess, was it was a hopefulness. Mm-hmm. You know, you cannot bring back Peter Davison without saying, as the doctor, without saying, wow, you know, you've gotten about 30 to 40 years older and you're a little chunkier now and you're bald on top. Mm-hmm. And it fit. It's like the doctor should always look like young Peter Davison during the time until he regenerated. He shouldn't have gotten old. We can get Matt Smith back at any moment. We could 30 years from now, old Matt Smith, 40 years from now, old Matt Smith can come back and do a Christmas episode as Doctor Who. And we can have that.
Yeah.
And it doesn't disturb the story of his regeneration or his ending. And it could be in that Christmas town story.
I like that aspect of it.
I love the aspect that they left it open for us for the first time. If they were going to regenerate one of my favorite doctors, allow it to have an opening where he will always be able to, like, again, 20 years from now, they say, hey, Matt, we'd like to bring you back. Oh, yeah. But you know, I'm really old and I'm balding now. That's okay. You yeah. lived, your doctor lived all that time to be yeah. like a 100-something-year-old man. We can use you anytime.
I still don't quite get why he was on Trenzalore, other than to guard the crack.
And, well, yeah. I agree with you on that.
and so all those people are attacking these poor human colonists in Christmas.
Yeah, didn't they send wooden Cybermen?
Yeah.
Something like that.
Wooden Cybermen and...
Yeah.
It just didn't feel like the strongest episode to me. I mean,
it was not. By far, it was not.
A lot of people say it comes around because Matt Smith quit and Stephen Moffat thought he had another year with this doctor. And because he's quit, I mean, Stephen Moffat's a phenomenal person, a phenomenal writer and showrunner. And I get palpitations thinking about what his workload must have been like. And this is again why it's a bit like being a sports fan, because sports fans sit there going in their armchairs with their beer bellies going that you know, I could have taken that shot, or what's the manager thinking? If I was the manager of this team, I'd have done this.
Yeah, but you're not looking at it that way. You're able to actually now put yourself into the mind of a writer, which you've been a writer. And you can actually say, like you just said, his workload was such. Again, story-wise, no, I agree. It was not it was such a pleasant regeneration episode for me. He cut back to being, you know, the Matt Smith of this time before he goes.
I loved
about it was the concept that for the first time, again, the doctor can age, that Matt Smith can age, and we can have him back, and it still fits. About, they don't have to describe why now he is old and fat or whatever the case may be. He aged in that episode, so he could always come back.
Yeah, he could sneak away from Trenzalore.
I mean,
but yes, yeah, so time of the Doctor. It was good rewatching it, but it did make me realize that we don't know the exact truth, but the rumors are he lost him for a season before he thought he was going to lose him. And so he decided to try and tie everything up so he could have a soft reboot with Capaldi. And that, I think that's probably maybe he'll agree as well. Maybe he could, you know, these things don't have to stop if your lead actor stops. That's the whole point of Doctor Who. He could exactly. maybe have just gone, do you know what? It's Capaldi with this story I had planned anyway. Let's bring in Tasha Lem was supposed to be part of it. The paper mainframe was supposed to have a lot more going on. I love the silence and then to see them sort of reduced to being weird confessions and then just bit parts. I don't know. There's so many things that irritate me about that episode. But again, same with all things.
Yeah.
My description of watching Rose for the first time, I'm still there going, the quality of the writing, the acting is superb. And I'm, you know, in a way, I'm nitpicking because that's part of being a writer is you'd look at stuff.
Well, see, that's the beauty of how you can. That's the beauty of how
I look at that and go, he should have just gone, okay, lost my actor. It's Doctor Who. This is still going to be my next season. But I guess, who knows? We'd have to sit down with Stephen Moffat and go, you know, you're genius, but what happened there? But maybe he was going to leave when Matt left. And then when he realized he couldn't, but he was going to have to hire a new doctor, it was like, well, I kind of don't want any of this. This aggregation of plot lines I haven't quite worked out the ends for. let's do it all and then I can start again.
The other one, my last one, though.
Yeah, so yes, we should get on to your last one.
How does that one fall with you?
Day of the Doctor, I think it's absolutely amazing. And again, the watching of it, because it was the 50th, and it was... as with all Doctor Who, it taps into a sort of nostalgia thing. So it was the 50th, this thing that was older than me, that had been part of my life since before I could form memories. And it was the 50th, and I was watching in a fucking cinema because...
It was in
cinemas all over. It was in the cinemas in States as well.
Oh, but I didn't get to see it that way.
But I watched it in a cinema, and I was just swept away with it. It was fun. It was brilliant. And then when Tom Baker comes on, I cried.
Oh,
I was in a cinema and I wasn't the only one by the cinema was full of Doctor Who. Yeah. Everybody was crying because Tom Baker's we'd forgotten about him because we'd just been carried into the story.
Yeah.
And the story was over and none of us were going, It wasn't like we were watching some band and they were like, why haven't they played Monkey Gone to Heaven? Why haven't they played my favorite song or whatever? Because we were just swept away with the story and we were loving it. And then we were reminded, oh yeah, Tom Baker, because we heard his voice. And that was, his magical moment.
Yeah, you hear his voice and you know that's Tom Baker. I mean,
it was just, it made me, I was crying so much.
I'm teary just thinking about remembering it because it was just so beautiful and so lovely. And in that, we had Revelations, we had War Doctor,
Well, the casting. This is all stuff that's kind of rehashed now with the Fugitive Doctor and everything. But I really, that was another great thing of Moffat's run was the War Doctor invention.
Yeah.
Which was just that. I remember that whole idea of the Trenzalore thing. That's why I was a little bit disappointed it all ended up on Time of the Doctor. Because I thought it got, I've got a season's worth of things. Let's speed them up.
I know, yeah.
So it was all, but the journey on the way, the having Clara jumping into his time stream, brilliant sci-fi, and then who the fuck's that? And then I just remember seeing John Hurt is the War Doctor.
What? Just that little when you saw him regenerate from McGann's doctor, which was great to see him as the doctor again.
Oh yeah,
to me the
Knight again, of the Doctor. Yeah, that was
like I said, to me that was just great to see him as the doctor again because I knew he would be so good at the part. Yeah. And then to see they did a reflection, so they didn't have to make him look youthful anymore, but they showed that he was young when he transitioned.
Yeah,
so you know that John Hurt, as you know, the young John Hurt, he looked like he did back in Alien. From there on, the Doctor had a long, long life as the War Doctor.
Yeah,
so these are adventures that we'll never know. I mean, we can't have John Hurt now come back from the dead
I guess you're right actually, because that was the first time we'd sort of acknowledged that the Doctor ages in his skin.
Right. Yeah. He ages in his skin.
Which is then a few episodes later is what Matt Smith does.
Right.
Because actually we'd never really had that.
No, we never had the chance to. It was almost like Hartnell just started off as an old man, an old geezer. Yeah. So we didn't know. But it was so beautifully done. And then having Rose back. And look, everybody had their favorite doctor. If you're the new Doctor Who group, it was David Tennant was the favorite. Mm-hmm. And then for us classics, you know, of a certain age, we had Tom Baker. Oh, yeah. Come on.
I remember reading a thing going Moffat just saying, looking back at his time on Doctor Who and just going, all I know is I didn't fuck up the 50th.
It's my ultimate favorite. I mean, when I think it's just my ultimate favorite.
Day of the Doctor was like a little miracle, and it was weird because it was this Doctor Who was like suddenly the most popular thing in the world, is how it seemed. Like friends were phoning me up from the States going, Doctor Who's on at my local theater.
See, that's the thing.
And they only knew Doctor Who as this thing that they knew because I'd shown them some when they came over and stuff. And
Doctor Who used to be such a very niche thing in the States. If you're an American and you're a Doctor Who fan, it's just like we started off talking about at the beginning of this podcast.
You were
an uber geek, nerd, the big nerd, if you were a Doctor Who fan as well, which I was. It was in no way public knowledge. But it's the weirdest thing. You know, in today's life right now, we have people that know comic book characters that are, one of my favorite of the Marvel Comics movies is the first Guardians of the Galaxy movie. It's one of my favorites of all of them. Who would have thought that people would be into those characters as much as they are?
That they're
common knowledge. Oh, Groot. I am Groot. I mean, who would have thought that that would be quoted ever in today's society? I am Groot.
Yeah, yeah. All these little things that started off in pulpy comics.
And pulpy
television.
Pulpy comics, pulping with the newsprint, you know.
Gosh. Yeah, and it all comes together with Cutaway and the...
And we're still doing comic books, buddy.
Still doing comic books, and we're still using IP. Based loosely on Doctor Who characters. I will say Stephen B. Scott, thank you so much.
I've had fun, my friend. I could do this a lot.
You have been listening to The Bunker from Cutaway Universe. Your host has been Ian Winterton, produced by James Steventon of Bamalam Productions. Gods and Monsters advert voiced by Brian Blessed. All music by Paul Phillips. For more on Cutaway and to buy online, visit cutawaycomics.co.uk or follow us on Twitter.